You're listening to The Dan Nichols Show.
If you are watching this episode of The Dan Nichols Show podcast, then what I'm about to speak about will be visually apparent instantly. However, if you are listening, as many of you do, then do yourself a favor and nip over to one of our social media platforms, to Instagram or TikTok or Facebook, or we can fax it through to you if you're living in Pietermaritzburg, because you will need a visual backup of my introduction to my guest, because he is not just a very good friend of mine, but someone who clearly takes his appearance on The Dan Nichols Show very, very seriously, because he's arrived in our temporary studio set up here in the Manor House at De Grendel in Durbanville, a great old wine estate under the stewardship of Sir De Villiers Graaf, in the kind of outfit that if you take Bridgerton or Downton Abbey as your point of departure, well, he is at exactly the other end of the scale. We're somewhere between homeless surfer and lowly paid gym attendant. But it doesn't really matter, because what's behind the outfit is one of my dearest friends and a great South African icon, Rob Lowe. Welcome.
Hi, Daniel.
You literally have walked off the beach and into the studio.
Exactly. I actually drove in from Stilbaai 2 hours ago, and I was paddling this morning. I went out with the surf ski. I was out for about an hour paddling, and I came in and washed my hair, and actually I shaved. Can you believe it? So really, that's something unique for me.
Well, good for you, because the very laid-back wardrobe notwithstanding, you're looking absolutely fabulous. And I know we repeat this however many times you and I get to share a story or two together in front of an audience, but you're looking particularly good for somebody who should be dead. Because if we take back the Robbie Lowe story, you and I have known each other for years and years and years. Mm-hmm. But there was a point where I was amongst your very big circle of friends and even bigger circle of fans and admirers, where the word was out fairly clearly, make the most of the time we have left with Rob Lowe, because he's not going to be with us much longer. Now, I'll get back to that cancer story in a moment, because it is such an uplifting and inspiring story. But is it still, as you get out into the water and still by, as you take in another sunrise, another sunset, another walk on the beach with Azil, your wife, and look at the kids and other grandkids, is it a daily reminder that you're having experiences that at one point it didn't look like you were ever going to?
I've been lucky. Apart from that, I also had that horrific boat accident where I nearly died.
You are a walking death wish.
and then the plane crash in the Kruger Park. So yeah, so I'm just thankful. I mean, daily I wake up and just, you know, look around me and I say I'm thankful. And I think too many people, as they grow maturer, I don't say older, because, you know, we mature now as we get older.
I think I get older, but I never get mature. My wife will back you up on this.
I never mature properly. Even so, that's my problem. But as we mature, as good wine does, or cheese, I think we and people just become so negative about life. I mean, really cranky and old. You know, people about 80 years old, they become old. I'm moaning about everything. And I just want to say to them, enjoy your life. Just be thankful daily, really. And celebrate life, you know, and that was my sort of motto when I was flown across to Houston, Texas. It's now 16 and a half years ago.
That's incredible.
So, yeah, I've enjoyed my life, and I mean daily I just celebrate it, and I think it's important that we can live that with that motto. I think a lot of people don't. We look upon the negativity of life all the time. But really, Dan, I just came from Stilbaai. We still live in an unbelievable country. We live in a paradise. So we're very, very fortunate. And
are indeed. And you drive reminders of that whenever I see you, because you are such a positive and such an upbeat person. And you've got reason to, because as you've alluded to, many of these skirmishes with misfortune. Before we get to this remarkable cancer story, and although we've told it many times together, I think it is so important with so many people facing cancer themselves or with friends and family. Yeah. But before you got to that, you did find many other ways to get into trouble. Tell me about the plane crash and going through that experience.
I'm trying to think. About 20 years back, they asked me to come give a speech up in Nelspruit, and then they said, okay, well, you know, with the speech, they'll fly us into the Kruger Park, the Chitwa, that sort of private area, and gave the speech. The following morning, we put a few bottles of wine, in the back of the Cessna, and it was myself, the pilot, and three other buddies of ours, one of the guys of a concession there, and we flew. And funny enough, I sat next to the pilot, and I think because I'm such an outdoor type of person, and I really believe it, and I can tell you a story. I can echo a story about Kelly Slater, who I lived with for a week in the Kruger Park, not the Kruger Park at Leopard Creek at Johan's house. Where I think with the whole, you know, advent of television and scrolling through your phone all the time, people don't have natural feeling anymore. But I had a premonition that we were going to go down. Can you believe it? And I kept on adjusting my seatbelt, thinking, how am I going to get out of here? As we were flying, and we came in. The guy was a bit late because we were watching Australia play against South Africa. And it was a bit late. It was June, July, the sock was broken. And he came in at a hell of a pace, and downwind. And then he realized that we weren't able to stop, and the ABS that wouldn't work. And so he started shouting next to me, and we went off the off the runway. Hit a few trees, broke the wing off next to me, hit a few trees, and thankfully stopped about 5 meters away from big baobabs and stuff. I immediately got out, jumped out. The guy, the pilot had broken his arm and shoulder, and he was shouting next to me. And the first thing was, obviously, with the wing broken off, petrol was pouring out of there, and my first instinct was, get out of here. Now we're in the middle of Kruger Park, if you understand. And this is actually an amazing story. And so I jump out, and my first thing is obviously survival. And then I thought, what the hell? I mean, I've got to get back and pull those guys out. So I jump out, run through the petrol, the diesel, petrol, gasoline, and I pull the three other guys out of the plane. And the pilot sort of split up with his shoulder. I pulled him out, and then now we're in the middle of the Kruger Park. So then there were people waiting for us with the Land Rover, and the Land Rover was about half a kilometer away. So I decided to go and look for them, and I started running to the Kruger Park. Can you believe it? And I thought,
is this dark by now?
No. Oh. Thank you. It wasn't, though. It was about...
So you can see the lions.
Yeah, they're about 2-3 o'clock. And the adrenaline pumps so much there. I just thought, if a lion comes now, I will just tackle it or do whatever. It's unreal. And this Land Rover arrives, and there's an old guy sitting there in the front row, and the driver's next to him, and he says, "Ah, you Rob Lowe, I hated you for so many years." So I look at him. I said, "Why do you hate me?" He said, "Because you used to play against Nas Berta, and we used to hate you up here." I said, "Wim, I said, do you realize I just had a plane crash and nearly died? What's more important?" It's a true story. Unbelievable.
That sums up stopping rugby fans brilliantly. Yeah. Just crash landed and almost died. Yeah. He's more worried about the fact that you used to play against his beloved Bulls.
Yeah, Nas Berta. Yeah. So that tells a bit of a story.
Did you think that as you were coming down, as you crashed, did you think it was all over?
I just with my other brushes, I just decided, you know, one thing you must do always is to look and just see where you're going. I mean, if there is a tree coming towards you, you can always try and duck away. The other guys had their head between their whatever these. You can imagine then. Yeah. So it was.
This is proper Tom Cruise Mission Impossible stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, it's actually the first time I've told the story on pods. So it's interesting. People don't know about that part of the story.
And aside from one broken shoulder, the other two guys all right?
Yeah, they're all fine. And then we watched the Australian game. You know, Australia played South Africa, and that night we came back and we drove back there, and then it hit us. We realized how close we were. Yeah. And we had a few bottles of vino, I must say.
Was the wine okay? Did the wine break on landing?
No, the wine was very important.
This is good. This is the important stuff. I can live with a broken shoulder, but not a broken bottle.
Broken bottle of wine, yeah.
Oh, dear. Well, that, for most people, would be the start and end of their I almost died on this day events. For Rob Lowe, this is just a normal Saturday afternoon. If it wasn't enough trying to come a cropper on an out-of-control aeroplane, you then tried something similar. Was it a powerboat?
I actually designed those double nose racing boats. I had a factory. In Roy Duck, I had my own factory, and we were racing. I was after my whole rugby adrenaline trip. I needed a little kick again in life. So I was surfing, and I started the whole boat factory, and we had I designed. I took basically the rubber duck. I took the nose away, and I designed like a catamaran. And so we were racing that, and we were racing up at Mykonos, and it was very rough water. And you're doing about 100 kilometers an hour, and I was piloting the thing, and it kicked me out of the boat, and the guy behind me went and he rode over me. And broke my shoulder in two places. Very lucky. You can imagine. I mean, the propeller obviously they hit me and jumped up, cut my arm to smithereens. And I was casualty. So what happened was it was a Sunday in Langebaan, and we couldn't find. I mean, you know, closest in the hospital is Frederiksberg. So we drove around. We actually went to Langebaan back. Where Mr. Alan Lamb was born, we would say. We went there, and the guys didn't have a place open, and they couldn't fly me. And then I went to Frederiksberg Hospital, and the hospital, it's incredible. The helicopter came along. It was a John Rolfe, a helicopter of Johannes. Can you believe it? What a small world it is. And the helicopter and the hospital didn't have a cross on top of it, so they didn't know where to go. And in the back of the car that I come along with, they had one flare, and we shot the flare off. I mean, it's incredible. It's an incredible story. It doesn't stop. And they shot the flare off, and the guy came along. At that stage, I was bad. And it cut me open completely. My brother had his hand in the wound. And now another story comes, which not many people know about. What's the guy who swims? He swims in Antarctica. Lewis Pugh was the guy next to the helicopter pilot. How's that? He was, can you believe it? He was a guy there. And so I got in the helicopter, and Lewis Pugh helped me. And in his book, he talks about it. It's an incredible story. And they flew me. And look, I mean, I was really on the edge there again. And all I just said, I'll never forget, all I just said, don't close your eyes, because it will be so easy. I mean, so much blood loss. It'll be so easy just to go and sleep, and then that's it. You go.
You never wake up.
And I remember just flying. It was probably January, and really hot, and flying over the wheat fields, coming closer and closer. And they flew me in, and I survived that. Incredible story comes from that whistle. I'll never forget. I mean, sort of landing with a helicopter, and the press at that stage. I was just giving up rugby. And so the press, they were on it. All the guards were there with the cameras and everything. And the press were all around there, and I was still half waving at them. I remember crazy, still waving at the press. They pulled me in, and there was emergency. Thankfully, there was some doctors there. There was an accident like a half an hour ago or like an hour before, and some kid. They'd worked there, and they thankfully, you know, been there, and those guys helped me. And yeah, my BP was like 40. So they put me under now immediately, obviously. And they did a double blood transfusion on me. And I know that they shocked me twice to keep me alive.
Were you conscious through all of this? Do you remember any of it happening?
Landing there, yes. Yeah. But immediately, the guys took my blood pressure and they realized, listen, this guy's 40, you basically gone. And they put me under and then obviously stuck blood into me immediately.
I mean, you're in annoyingly good condition for someone who's 70 or thereabouts and who's been ripped to shreds by a powerboat. just to have recovered as you have is remarkable.
Yeah. It took a time. It took about probably 6 months to get my arm back, and I could wipe my bum again. or scratch
that's
my
generally,
nose.
Generally the two medical.
Yeah, exactly. Most important things in life, or scratch my nose, or whatever it is. It was just crazy.
Now, importantly, because as a Western Province and Springbok flanker, as people like Nas discovered, you were one of the hardest, wildest men in rugby. Were they ever able to fix the boat after it had its fight with you?
No, propeller, not the boat.
You stuffed up the propeller. You recovered. Propeller never made it.
Never made it. But an incredible story comes. Obviously the press were there and was a big story, and Johan had actually heard about this. It's incredible, the whole thing that happens. Obviously, the medical clinic being involved, they put me in a private room and in intensive care, obviously, and nobody was allowed in. And this is another story which not many people know about. I actually have told this to a few people. And the great Etzebeth, not Cliffy, his brother, Scotty. So I played against him like many games.
So this would be Eben's uncle.
Eben's uncle, yeah. But he was like a looky what he wasn't. I mean, Cliffy was a rough looking guy, but Scotty was, I mean, he really was like Dracula on wheels, bro.
I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah, I'm not going to say
anything. You're listening, Scotty, any member of the Etzebeth family, that was Rob Lowe who said that, not Dan Nicol.
Even so what happens is I'm lying there and nobody's allowed in there. Nobody. My wife comes in and obviously the family member comes in. I'm lying there. I've just had this hell of an operation, a whole lot of blood infused in me. And I look up and I think, am I dreaming or not? And I see this apparition in front of me. And it's Scotty Etzebeth. And he's standing, I mean, he was a monster, you know, bigger than Eben even. He was, and he wasn't the nicest looking guy ever. I mean, he had a few, yeah, he was a big ballroom. He used to always brawl, you know, he was like a real cut to pieces, but a lovely guy. And he looks at me and he says to me in Afrikaans, he says, sorry, God, I had you lie my way in ya. To come and say to you that I love you. And he turns around and walks out.
Really?
Yeah. And you know what he did? He made it out as though he was my dominie. I was like, my priest. Can't believe it. And they believed him. And he came. He just wanted to come in there to say hi. Yeah. And that's it. It's a mess. They are just
that's
a unique,
special story. Yeah,
incredible story. But I'm getting goosebumps talking about that.
All right.
Incredible. Amazing.
So you get through this, you've crash-landed a plane Indiana Jones style, you've got out of that, you've picked a fight with a powerboat propeller, you've somehow won that one as well, but then you come to a very different kind of fight, and this was one when our friendship had begun and we knew each other well, and I remember the disbelief of hearing what had happened. How did you get the news that you got cancer, and what was your first reaction to it?
Well, the guy, I wasn't feeling good. And what they did was they did a gallbladder operation on me, and they pulled my gallbladder out, and they saw on the gallbladder, they saw the melanoma. So the stage 4. So basically,
that's kind of pack your bags, say goodbye to your friends.
Yeah. And then they also did a scan on me, and they found all of my insides pockmarked with so much cancer. And then our good friend heard about it through Skalk Berger and Weber. I actually had spent, it's amazing, the week before, myself and Skalky Jr., we were at Rockin' the Daisies. How's that? And I had a combi, and we were in the back of the combi, and we listened to the music and drinking tequila. How's that? Skalky and his wife and my wife and myself, and listened to music and jolly. But I didn't feel good. And then I went for the gallbladder operation, and they pulled the gallbladder up, and they obviously saw, you know, the melanoma on that. And then they did the scan, and they said, look, basically, the doctor did the scan wasn't I don't know if he was nervous or whatever he was, but he had a bit of a
Did he look at you and say, you used to tackle Nas Buerta as he was about to put you under?
The guy that came with the prognosis of melanoma, stage four, he was very dour, and like he sort of, in a way, said, listen, you're about to die, you know, type of situation. And I actually,
which is not an easy sentence to hear from a medical professional.
Yeah. And I mean, you know me well enough, Dan. I'm not a braggart at all, but I actually stood up and I actually said to him, I'll show you. I'll beat you. And that's my words.
And was that absolutely 100% genuine, or was part of it you trying to convince yourself of this?
No, genuine.
Yeah.
Genuine. I just believe that I'll beat it, you know? And I think we got another friend, Oscar Chulubsky, was going through the same thing, and he'll beat it. I've said to him the same thing, because you've got to be strong minded, and you've got to believe that you will beat it. I get in the old days, I said weekly, people phoning me at the end of their tether. And then I believe in helping. I actually enjoy it, because I was helped through my time. It becomes a bit of a mental, it pulls you back, because many times I would spend time with whoever, an hour on the phone, going through diets, what you do, what do you, whatever it is, and then I'd phone them back. And there's no answer, and you realize they've passed, you know. Yeah. And it actually pulls on you to realize how lucky I was.
And you had a combination of things in your favor. One, as you've shown with the plane crash and the boat, is absolute refusal to die. So I know my great great grandchildren will be interviewing you when they take over the podcast in years to come.
They will.
You also have this remarkable self-belief. And I suspect, having played professional sport where self-belief is so crucial, that probably would have played a role. And then you had a wonderful champion in your court, in your corner, great friend to us both, and someone who never gets nearly enough credit for the extraordinary amount he does for this country. And that would be Johan Ruperts. And it was through Johan that you ended up with one or two misadventures via London, if memory serves, finding yourself in Houston.
Exactly. Amazing. And then, I mean, yeah, that whole Houston story is also, I mean, it'll take me 2 hours to tell you, the incredible things that happened on the way.
In a nutshell, though, in Houston, this was, at that stage, groundbreaking technology, groundbreaking research. This wasn't a guarantee that this is going to help you, but it was a last throw of the dice.
Yeah. They the time when I arrived at Houston, so Johan was friends with certain President the Bushes, and so I could see the emails flying with President Bush, and yeah, I think he worked for Johan also at one stage. That's how incredible, powerful Johan Rupert is. But So I saw the emails flying, and he, I'm not really sure what he is with the University of Texas of the MD Anderson in Houston, Texas, but they arranged everything. So the time I arrived there, there wasn't really much they could do, except I was lucky enough that they could cut out at that stage certain parts of my cancer, which was in my liver, and they could cut like probably a third of my liver out, and it hadn't hit the sort of blood vein area. I was lucky enough they could cut that area, and then the small intestine also, which they cut out. When I was at university, Dan, I was probably the laziest student ever and the naughtiest student also. And when your back's against the wall and you realize that I've got to fight you, I spent hours and hours just researching people that have survived stage 4 cancer. And melanoma's on par with probably pancreas cancer-wise. Those are two killer cancers, stage 4. So you can imagine that what I was reading up, and I'd read up so much, and it's interesting that the pharmaceutical guys will kill me now, but the big thing is picking your immune system up, and that's been my savior, and my that's saved me.
And this is your gospel. I remember one of the great mistakes I've made in my life, coming around to visit you not long after you'd got back and you were on the road to recovery, and you offered me a drink, and I didn't inquire as to what it was. And it was this ghastly, fringe, illegal, vomit-inducing concoction that you'd brewed up in your garage. It was green and murky.
Exactly.
And there were probably dead things in there. It was just awful. But this is now your morning Rob's savior. It tastes horrific.
That's right.
But clearly it's working.
I tell you, so going back, interesting enough, a month ago, I've got a Rottweiler, like you've got a bull. I know that's your love.
Bull Mastiff.
Yeah, Bull Mastiff. I mean, I've got this Rottweiler of mine. I've had Rottweilers my whole life. And Zeus started licking his paws the whole time. And I thought, what the hell? And then eventually I was a still by about 3 weeks ago. I took him to the vet, and the vet said, listen, there's something wrong here. And he sent, obviously, he sent the stuff away, and it came back. Metastatic melanoma. Exactly the same cancer as I had. I mean, what's the chance for?
That's crazy.
Dogs just don't get, it's unbelievable. Incredible. I actually looked it up on Google. I said, it's just not done. So I don't know. It's just, to me, there's much more to life than what we ever will know. We'll ever know. I really believed in, after that especially. And I saw the vet, and the vet said, listen, the chance of your dog's survival is very, very small. And I said to him, listen, I survived, and I will do the same thing. And Zeus...
Are you feeding your poor dog?
That same stuff.
Oh,
can you believe it? But the dogs jumped around. I mean, they was in the river with Ollie the other day, swimming, and he seems to be fine. He hasn't gone back to his so, yeah, the biggest thing is, I will say it again now, the pharmaceutical companies, I believe, have been selling us a lie. I'll say it loud again. I believe your immune system is so, so important. If you can fire your immune system up, it'll beat any cancer.
So this show is, of course, sponsored by some major pharmaceutical companies from America. So I'd like to very vocally disagree with everything Rob has just said. Take those pills every day. I think you make some very specific points, but also just a more valid philosophy in this mad, crazy, scroll through your phone, 100 things happening every day, get 27 hours into the day. This approach you have of trying to be more relaxed in what you do, trying to take everything a little easier, it's just really good general life advice. And as you sit here straight off the beach, straight out the water, you're probably not even telling me that you fought off 3 great white sharks this afternoon, because that's kind of a regular day in the life of Rob Lowe. getting through all of that. And so it makes me so happy to see the space that you're in and to see that you're glowing and to see that you are doing the little things like getting out for a surf, enjoying your grandchildren, more grandchildren on the way pretty soon, watching this next generation. And your eyes light up whenever you talk about it to me. And I'm so happy that you have got a space now that I think if I look in comparison, when you won your greatest games for the Springboks, when you won great games for Western Province, at that stage, you probably thought, you know what, this is as good as life is going to get. And now, well later on in life, you're discovering so many other moments exactly. that put all of that rugby triumph in the shade.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. I've always, yeah, you know, been a positive person, and I've been fortunate. I must say, I've been very fortunate. I mean, from my career of sport to and again, I mean, my family. I'm very fortunate with my kids. We've all done very well. I mean, Roxy's done very well with Carl. I don't know if you've seen the Carl stuff she's brought out. I mean, lingerie. My wife said, "What lingerie?" And we're interesting. When she brought it out, I said to her after the first year, I said,
"It's very comfortable."
Yeah, very comfortable. Actually, I went no.
My friend Ken Forrester wears it.
Does he wear it? I thought so. Yeah,
strange man.
That strange guy. I thought so also. Hey, Ken.
All of this joy, and we've got through a lengthy conversation on plane crashes and boat accidents and cancer. We've barely touched on rugby, so we'll have to get you back to talk a bit about rugby. But I will ask you very quickly before we wrap
and
up.
And wine.
We need to talk about wine as well.
I'm a garagista. Do you know that? I've been a garagista for years.
Drinking wine out of a box in your garage does not make you a garagista.
Oh, that's right. True, yeah.
I do ask you very quickly, relating back to that man who gave you a hard time. Yes, beating cancer was incredible. Yes, surviving a plane crash and a boat accident. Yes, watching your grandchildren arrive and having this joy of another generation of the family. Was any of it, though, quite as good as absolutely nailing Naspurta in a tackle in a time before video cameras on the field?
I enjoyed it so much. Let me tell you, especially in front of that Wanderers Vaal crazy crowd. Now, I'll tell you what, I'll never forget. The rugby authorities weren't very happy with me. I remember they brought out a Sports Illustrated many years back. And they asked me, and Doc Craven wasn't happy with me, I know. And they asked me, what's the greatest sporting occasion in your whole life? And I said, having an 8-foot tube at Jeffrey's Bay. It won't happy. And it's still the same.
And those are tubes you still ride, as the surfing and the enjoyment of life is so key. Rob, I love spending time with you because whenever it's done, there is a big smile on face. So thank you for surviving the air crash. Thank you for surviving the boat crash. Thank you for beating cancer. And in the next, you know, 80 or 90 years you have ahead of you, because we're not getting rid of you anytime soon. Just keep inspiring us and putting a smile on face and showing us the kind of philosophy that in this mad, rushed world of ours,
you're right,
a really good one to embrace.
That's true. Thanks, Daniel. Always like it catching up. Eh? I mean, we come a long way together. Eh?
We haven't.
From those days across from the Weinberg Hospital.
Yeah, my little.
Some of those days, the little place that you had. I mean, that's many years back. Yeah. How many years is that?
That's going back 20, 25 years.
Wow.
So fair work. I was 3. So that was my apartment, unless, of course, you are the Weinberg Police Department, in which case I've never, ever owned it. Rob Lowe, thank you so much. My very special guest this week. And I love the fact he dressed up for the occasion just to be on the show. He's a great Springbok. He's a cancer survivor. He's a wonderful storyteller. And best of all, he's a shining example of making the very best of every day you have and doing so with a broad, tanned smile on face. Rob Lowe, this week on The Dan Nicholl Show.
You're listening to The Dan Nicholl Show.